I call this meeting of the House Elections Committee to order. There is a quorum present. So the first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of our January 18th meeting. Vice Chair Greenman, would you like to move approval of the minutes?
So moved.
Okay, the minutes have been approved. Is there any discussion to the minutes? All right, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, we've adopted the minutes. The first bill on the agenda is House File 496. Welcome to the committee, Chair Cleaborn. I will move that House File 496 be recommended to be placed on the general register. And I understand you have a DE1 amendment. Would you like me to move that amendment?
Yes, please, Chair Freiberg. I would appreciate that.
Okay, I will move the DE1 amendment. And I understand you have a, are interested in an oral amendment. Would you like to describe that?
Yes, please. Thank you, Chair Freiberg. The oral amendment has to do with the word house on line 1.18 and line 1.23. And this was an amendment. The bill was heard in the Senate yesterday. And this is a Republican oral amendment that was brought to the committee that I was just made aware of this morning. So in order to have the language conform with the Senate language, I would ask for that oral amendment, please.
And I checked with Representative Torkelson about this beforehand. I mean, we do have a 24-hour rule, but I think changing the word house to the word body seems like a technical change to me. Representative Torkelson, you're cool with that?
Get organized, Mr.
Sure.
Chair.
While you're getting organized, maybe Mr. Gehring, is there anything you need just to make this formal?
Mr. Chair, no. I can just restate the oral amendment. So page 1, line 18, delete the word house and insert body. And page 1, line 23, delete house and insert body.
We're getting there, Mr. Chair.
Sure, it's okay.
Before
we take action, I'll have Chair Cleaborn describe the bill.
Yes, are you ready?
So.
Thank you. Good morning. This bill was heard last year, and there were a few concerns in the State Government Finance Committee last year about maybe some of the language being confusing. So this year, we bring the bill forward with revised language that incorporated concerns, and now I will just kind of let you know what it is. So voters, House File 496 has to do with a ban on pay-to-play contributions to gain access to legislators. And voters have an innate belief that certain people have more privileged access and that government only answers to those who pay for it. Permitting social access clubs or special access for contributions would only confirm that belief. House File 496 just really simply cleans up the fact we have a loophole in our current campaign finance laws. And this came to light through a newspaper article that was published in November of 2021 that some members in another body were trying to form a social access club. And we said, no, that's not really going to work for us in the House. So we brought this bill forward, and now it has been picked up both in the House and the Senate. So what this bill does is it just closes the loophole. The bill prohibits lobbyists, political committees, and other political funds from making contributions for the purpose of attending an event during the regular session of the legislature, which is held by either political campaign committee of a candidate for the legislative office, a constitutional office, or the House political caucuses themselves, or a political party organization within the House of a legislature. And it also prohibits membership or access to a facility operated by that same candidate for legislative office, constitutional office, or political party organization within the body of the legislature. And that's really what it is. It prohibits paying for access to legislators.
Thank you. The amendment is still on the table, and we do have a testifier, Representative Torkelson. Did you have a question at this point?
It can wait.
Okay, sure. You will be first on the list, Representative right. Torkelson. Representative Torkelson, have you had a chance to review the amendment?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'll take that you're okay. So I will move the oral amendment described by Mr. Gehring, changing the word House on line 1.18 and 1.23 to the word body. This is an amendment to the DE1 amendment. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Torkelson.
The term also occurs on line 1.7. Do we need to change it there too?
It is my understanding.
Chair Cleaver.
Thank you. I spoke with Mr. Sigurdsson of the Campaign Finance Board, who is here to answer any questions about this. He said we only need to change the language which is in the amendment, the language we're adding.
Okay.
All right. So I'll renew my motion for the oral amendment to the DE1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the oral amendment is adopted. So then we have the DE1 amendment as amended before us. Is there any discussion to that? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the bill is in the shape you would like, Chair Cleaverne. So I think we'll go to testimony now. Okay. We will go to testimony. I know we have Mr. Sigurdsson available for questions. Then the testifier that signed up is Ken Peterson. Welcome to the committee, Ken Peterson. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Ken Peterson. I'm with the group Clean Elections Minnesota. I'm a volunteer and a board member, and we're a nonpartisan nonprofit that supports fair elections in Minnesota. I'll be very brief. There are two things. As you all know, you have to raise money to run for office. Same time, it's also important to get information from lobbyists. We all know that. That's the way you find out about what's going on. With the two functions, the problem is with this practice of joining those two together during the session on your property where it's obviously inappropriate. It's a good thing. It would encourage respect for our institutions, and we should not even allow the appearance of taking contributions during the session for potential favors, or even attempt people to do it. It's a bad policy. It's bad for government. It's bad for the public. So I'm very glad to see this had some bipartisan support. It's a good bill. Should support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Ken Peterson. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak on this bill? Mr. Sigurdsson, I see you standing. Okay, I think Mr. Sigurdsson is just approaching in case there are technical questions. So seeing no additional members of the public wishing to testify, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, Representative Cleghorn, are there any examples of this actually happening in Minnesota?
Chair Cleghorn.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and Lead Torkelson. The truth of the matter is this came to us because there was a legislative organization, as I understand it, that requested an advisory opinion. In that advisory opinion, it was stated that, yes, in fact, these access clubs could exist. One of the things that I always say is you don't tempt honest people. And so this closes the ability to tempt honest people from stepping into something that they probably shouldn't.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer, Representative Cleghorn, but you did not answer my question. Has this ever actually happened?
Chair Cleghorn.
Chair Freiberg and Lead Torkelson. The answer to your question is someone requested permission to do it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cleghorn, has an event described in this bill ever happened? An event, an actual fundraising event where people came to a club, paid for access, and money was raised. Has this ever happened in Minnesota? Can you please answer my question clearly?
Chair Cleghorn.
Chair Freiberg and Lead Torkelson. The answer to your question is we don't know because it hasn't been prohibited. So no one has filed a complaint against someone. So therefore, we don't really know. But I will ask Mr. Sigurdsson if anyone has filed a complaint about this.
Welcome to the committee, Director Sigurdsson. Please identify yourself for the record and respond to the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Sigurdsson. I'm the Executive Director of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. Mr. Chair, Representative, no, sir, to my knowledge, there's been no complaint filed about a private membership club or a fundraising event held during the session where the ticket was bought before the fundraising event or before the legislative session began.
Representative Torkelson, any follow-up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. To my knowledge, nothing like this has ever actually happened. I think everyone in the legislature is well aware that we do not accept contributions during a legislative session. That's been clear, made clear to me for every year that I've been here, the last 15 years. I agree that this is a good bill because this is a practice we don't want, but somehow I don't want the public to get the impression that this has been going on, because it has not been going on, at least to my knowledge and the knowledge of anybody that I've ever spoken to. Has there ever been a club like this actually set up where people paid to play? That's not the way we operate in Minnesota. That's not the tradition we have. And I'd be very happy to hear about an event like this, because I'd go directly to the people that organized it and let them know what I thought.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Cleburne, for bringing this forward. And I think I am delighted that Representative Torkelson and I agree that we certainly would not want to allow any such thing to happen. And, you know, the reality is in this particular situation, asking permission to do something implies intent. It implies that someone's actually thinking about it. And I think this is a really common sense way to countermand that issue before it becomes an issue. It's that old expression that an ounce of prevention equals a pound of cure. And really, I think this is just a common sense approach to already basically outline what we already know to be true, that this would be wrong. Thank you. I appreciate the bill.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Any additional member discussion? Okay, seeing none. Chair Cleburne, any closing remarks?
Yes, thank you. And I just would like to extend my thanks and gratitude for everybody who has read the bill and has spoken about it. I would also like to bring to the attention of the public that there is also another letter of support for the bill that was in your packets today. And to Lead Torkelson, I would like to say to you, I appreciate the question that you brought forward, because in this testimony today, I was very careful to not throw stones at anyone, just to say that there is an advisory opinion that was requested. And this is a bill to prevent honest people from being tempted to do bad behavior. So thank you for your, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. With that, I will renew the motion that House File 496, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. The next bill on the agenda is House File 477. Welcome to the committee, Representative Wolgamott. So I will move that House File 477 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I understand you have an author's amendment, Representative Wolgamott. Would you like me to offer that to put the bill in the shape you would like?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would very much appreciate that.
Okay, so I will move the, that is the A1 amendment, I believe. Is there any discussion to the A1 amendment? With seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment. Oh. Yes, is your testimony to the A1 amendment itself, or is it to the bill? Yeah, no, there will be an opportunity for you to speak. I have you on the list. So the bill is in the shape you would like. There is another amendment, but it is not an author's amendment, so I will hold off on that for the moment. So please describe your bill, Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of this committee. I'm honored to be here this morning to present to you House File 477, which is a bill to give Minnesotans the opportunity to automatically receive an absentee ballot. Mr. Chair and members, currently in the 2022 election, over 60,000 Minnesotans voted with an absentee ballot. That's including nearly 3,500 Minnesotans who are serving overseas in our military. And Mr. Chair and committee members, of all those Minnesotans, almost half of them, 26,000, are on a list to permanently receive an absentee ballot application form. What this bill does, Mr. Chair, is very simple. It gives Minnesotans the opportunity to, instead of permanently receiving an application form, they will be able to permanently receive an absentee ballot. I'll walk you through the subdivisions of the bill, Mr. Chair and members. Subdivision 1 requires updating the voter registration form on both the paper and electronic versions to provide a box to indicate whether a voter wishes to be added for absentee ballots automatically for each election. Subdivision 2 updates the current permanent absentee voter status to change it from a status that allows a voter to receive an absentee application each election to one that allows a voter to receive an absentee ballot automatically for each eligible election. Subdivision 3 removes the requirement that counties mail voters on the permanent absentee voter list applications in a certain time period, because we're just going to be sending them their ballots, so they will no longer need to receive an application form every time. And then Subdivision 5 provides an absentee ballot board reviewing an absentee ballot returned by a voter may compare the information on the voter's absentee ballot application or in the voter record for the purpose of accepting absentee ballots. And then Section 6, as amended, makes the bill effective June 1st of 2024. Mr. Chair and members, there is a fiscal component to this. It will be $80,000 in fiscal year 2024. That's because there will be changes will need to be made to the statewide voter registration system to accommodate the changes that will be made here. And then additional development work will be required to facilitate reports removing voters from the permanent absentee voter list as we get information due to ineligibility or if the ballot is returned as undeliverable. That's estimated at $16,000 in the ongoing years to come. So, again, Mr. Chair and members, this is about making sure that we conform to the spirit of what our law is. As you can see in Subdivision 5, what we have in statute says permanent absentee voter status. Really, all we have is permanent absentee application status. We want to make sure that we are conforming to the expectations that are in statute. We want to make sure that the 60,000 and growing Minnesotans who vote absentee have the opportunity to, instead of having to deal with the burden of additional paperwork, that they can get what they want, they can get their absentee ballot, and they can participate in our elections in that fashion. One last thing I'd like to add is that this is happening in other states throughout the country, in blue states and red states, and I think it's time that we have this opportunity for voters here in Minnesota. So that, Mr. Chair and committee members, is the policy changes of the bill as well as the fiscal ramifications. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I do have some testifiers here who can share even more insight on the details of this legislation and why we are hoping for your support on the chair's motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. I think I'll turn to testimony now. I do have four. I do have four people who've signed up to testify, so I'll call them up individually. If you could keep your testimony to like 3 minutes each, I think that would be helpful. First on the list is Nicole Freeman from the Office of the Secretary of State. After Nicole Freeman will be Stephanie Stasel. Welcome to the committee, Nicole Freeman. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Freiberg. My name is, and members, my name is Nicole Freeman, Government Relations Director for the Office of the Secretary of State. It's nice to see you all again. The Office of the Secretary of State supports this House file, which modifies the way the permanent absentee ballot list operates. So currently, those who have asked to be on this permanent absentee list are mailed an application ahead of each eligible election. The voter then returns the application, and the county processes that application, and then the county mails the ballot out to the voter. House File 477 would change this list to be a permanent absentee ballot request list, and the list would remain as an opt-in for people who wish to always receive a ballot mailed to them. This change removes a step for administrators, as well as for voters, in mailing and returning that ballot application. It meets voters' expectations, which is that they'll receive a ballot for every election they're eligible to participate in. As Representative Wolgamott mentioned, it adds a box to the voter registration form that allows the voters to sign up for this program as they register or update their registration. And there's also a standalone form to request this if they don't need to update their registration. The permanent absentee status, it's tied to the voter's record. So this request follows a voter as they might move or become ineligible or inactive. The counties will then queue a new absentee ballot record ahead of each election, and then the ballots are sent out to that voter's updated voter registration address. This proposal has been heard a few times in committee, so it might be familiar to some of you. Last biennium, it was also included in House File 9. So we urge a yes vote on this measure to help improve efficiency for administrators and voters alike. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole Freeman. Next on the list is Stephanie Stasel. And after Stephanie Stasel will be Lily Sassy. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Stephanie Stasel. I live in St. Paul, and I have been an election judge since 2008. I'm also a leader in Isaiah. Every year, I go to 90 Plato, Ramsey County Election Board, and fill out an absentee request for an election or the elections for that year. I think House File 477 is for me and probably most election judges, as well as many other Minnesota voters, a very common sense administrative change that would save election judges like me and other voters from filling out an absentee request every year. It would also encourage voters during non-statewide elections to vote if they receive a ballot every year for every election. I believe this change would encourage more Minnesotans to take part in this civic duty, one of the most important things we as citizens do, vote. House File 477 makes it easier, more accessible, and less confusing for more Minnesotans to vote. Thank you for your support for House File 477.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list is Lily Sassy, and after Lily Sassy will be Elena Niehoff. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Freiberg, Vice Chair Greenman, and Lead Torkelson. My name is Lily Sassy, and I am the director of We Choose Us, a nonpartisan coalition of 27 organizations and growing across the state of Minnesota who are committed to building a democracy that truly and meaningfully puts the will of the people at the center. Our coalition is made up of a variety of different organizations, from unions to grassroots organizations and advocacy groups to good governance organizations, many with large membership bases, and all of whom have been working to improve our democracy and bring more people in to the process for years, and for some, even decades. We are excited to work with all of you, our knowledgeable elections administrators and judges, and the Secretary of State to strengthen and expand our freedom to vote. House File 477 is a necessary change that would yield those results. As you've heard, so many voters already think that by signing up to receive an absentee ballot one year, they'll receive it again the following year. This population also includes the 30,000 election judges who have to request new ballots year after year. And while they might have a deeper understanding of the current system, it's an unnecessary additional hoop to jump through for these folks who commit to serving as judges year after year. Our goal is to ensure that we have an easy to understand, streamlined elections process that provides options for voters rather than any further barriers or confusing hoops to jump through. This bill would do that. We've built relationships with many, many community members, voters, through intentional outreach since the beginning of our campaign in January 2021, and listen closely to improvements voters are asking for. And this is one of them. We strongly encourage a yes vote on House File 477. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Louise Sassy. Next, and our final testifier who signed up previously, is Elena Niehoff. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee members. My name is Elena Niehoff, and I am testifying in objection to Bill H.F. 477. I believe that the Bill 477 removes the safeguards and make our elections more vulnerable. The Minnesota State Statute 2028, Section 203B.04, Subdivision 5, required to send absentee ballot applications to the permanent absentee voter. But the bill H.F. 477 changed absentee ballot applications to absentee ballots. By doing so, hundreds of thousands of absentee ballots will be sent to voters without their latest request. In my opinion, it will cause more confusion and a potential fraud. I will encourage the team and all representatives to watch the documentary called 2,000 Mules. If you have not watched that, just a short snippet. 2,000 individuals were harvesting the battle and abusing an absentee ballot system. Constitution of the United States guarantees every American the rights to vote. The role of the government is to secure those rights for us. So I urge you to vote no on the bill H.F. 477, and we the people, I would like to ask provisional ballots, paper ballots only, and one-day voting, which means it will secure our election. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak to this bill? Okay, seeing none, I will close the testimony portion of this hearing. So there is another amendment. This is, I believe Representative Stevenson was going to offer this amendment. However, he is presenting a bill in another committee. Vice Chair Greenman has graciously offered to offer it. Would you like to say anything regarding?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer, I think it's Amendment 2. Is that right? Okay. A2.
Okay. Thank you. Vice Chair Greenman has offered Amendment A2. Do you have any remarks regarding
that? So thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment, what it does is it makes the list, the permanent absentee ballot list, public as it relates to the way that we make the voter registration list and other things public. This is something that 48 other states do, so it's just us in North Carolina that do not do that, and so we want to bring it in line in terms of both transparency that we have in our voter registration rolls. We have transparency as it relates to if you voted, and this would just bring us in line with 48 other states.
Representative Wolkmott, did you have any comments regarding this?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I would just like to say that I accept this as a friendly amendment. I think it's a good clarification, and in addition to all the legitimate points that Vice Chair Grunin made, looking at it from the standpoint of my voters and the people that I represent, I think it will help prevent confusion for voters who, instead of getting their absentee ballot, in addition to that, could be getting, applications from political campaigns, from nonprofits. So after careful consideration, I would urge members to support this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Wolkmott. Any discussion regarding the amendment? Okay. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. The amendment's been adopted. So to the bill, is there any member discussion? Representative Perkelson and Representative Davis. Would you like Representative Davis to go first?
Yes.
Okay, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. So you had mentioned other states are doing this. What other states are currently doing this?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Davis. There are actually seven jurisdictions within the United States that currently do this. It is, and I've got the list here, if you'll give me a moment, Mr. Chair and Representative Davis. Seven jurisdictions: Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, the District of Columbia, Virginia, Arizona, and Montana.
Okay. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wolgamott, how long have these other states been doing this?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davis, I don't have the answer to that question. I just know the states that have currently done it in our most recent election.
Okay. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. What problems are there that could, or potential problems could arise? And that's why I was asking how long these other states have been doing it. What problems have they been seeing with this? So my question is, what potential problems could arise from this?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Davis. I haven't seen any. I think this is a very simple bill that just conforms what voters' expectations are when they want to sign up to permanently receive an absentee ballot. Instead of having an application and having to go through the extra, burdensome paperwork of filling out an application, sending it back, the local jurisdictions have to process it, then they send back the ballot and all that. It just kind of streamlines what voters' expectations are of this. So, there have been no, and again, this, we actually have several counties in Minnesota as well that are vote by mail only that do this type of thing, and they haven't seen any problems either. So, from what I can tell, this is a very simple change. It will just be to the benefit of voters and strengthen our democracy and cut down on paperwork.
We're getting a lot of members on the list here. Final question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. As we can see, the testifier that last testified, many people's confidence has been shaken in our elections. You go back to 2016, of course, Hillary Clinton going around saying that Russia had stolen the election from her and gave it to President Donald Trump. And then we're all very aware of 2020 and the accusations made in that election. So how is this restoring people's confidence in our elections? It's undeniable that right now, including in our state, many people's confidence are shaken in our elections. How is this going to restore public confidence?
Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Davis. It's undeniable that elected officials and other leaders have been spreading false information about the 2020 election. And it's also undeniable that actually already in Minnesota, we have 1,140 precincts in Minnesota that use mail balloting. And 153,800 registered voters live in mail balloting precincts in Minnesota. So these are voters who already automatically receive their ballot by mail each year. They won't be affected by this bill, but it just goes to show that we've been doing this a little bit in Minnesota. We've been doing this in other states. There haven't been any issues. And, let's not distract from the fact that this is just a simple, straightforward attempt to be able to help Minnesotans exercise their freedom to vote. This bill will help seniors. It will help people with disabilities. And by increasing participation in our elections, it will strengthen people's faith in our democracy.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just confused why we haven't ever in the election judge process, because we have to go through training, get signed up, and register, that we don't have already where you can check a box to automatically, to go ahead and get the ballots. That seemed like a non-controversial thing to have done, and that would have been the first step. Is it possible that testifier Nicole Freeman can return
for
some questions?
Imagine that's fine. Maybe proceed with your question.
Right. I'm wondering what the number of absentee ballots mailed to college dorms are in the last two elections.
It's a very specific question. If you're able to answer, go ahead. Otherwise, we can certainly make sure we can provide that information to Representative Kwam after the committee. But proceed, Nicole Freeman.
Sure, Mr. Chair and Representative Kwam. I don't know that number off the top of my head. I'm not entirely sure we would need a list of the address for every single dorm across the state of Minnesota. I don't have an answer for that. I can ask our elections team if they're able to pull that together.
Okay.
Representative Kwam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Additionally, I'd like to know how many absentee ballots are sent to apartments. And then annually, what are the number of changes to those addresses for dorms and apartments. And the reason, Mr. Chair and members, why I ask this is because I've lived in my current residence for over a decade, and I'm still receiving mail aimed at people that lived there before me. I know people that live in apartments that, you know, they're quite frequently receiving mail previously. I know, and I've seen absentee ballot registration forms from the government that have been sent out by counties to old addresses. So I have some concerns as to the frequency and accuracy of the updating of the lists that the Secretary of State's office utilizes for sending these official documents out, because, you know, frankly, the two areas I asked to get an idea of the quantities are areas where it is very common to move, you know, fairly frequently, a good percentage. And so I'm trying to get an understanding for the opportunity for errors to be made and stumbling stones put before people that might be tempted to, oh, I see a bunch of absentee ballots, you know, thrown away next to the mailboxes in the apartments, which we actually had. And I see the vice chair shaking her head no. Actually, there are pictures of that with the applications for absentee ballots and stuff thrown in there. And I you know, we don't have to digress on that. It's our job to look at, this is a great thing we want to do. What are the possible unintended consequences, and how can we give confidence to the citizens of our state if we obviously have some issues with the mailing lists we're using for voters? And the cleaning up, and not the 2020, but the 2018, we had two audits of the voter registration system that showed tens of thousands of bad registrations and other issues. The independent legislative auditor. So it's our job to ensure some confidence and to avoid some possible unintended consequences. I don't think this bill is quite addressing that, but I would love to see a bill that allowed in the election judge process to where they could check off, and it'd be very easy because they're already doing the process to become an election judge.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for expressing that concern, Representative Quam. I know, you know, we both share the goal of wanting to make sure we have high integrity in this process, so thank you for bringing those concerns. Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, I'd like to, and committee members, I would just like to remind the committee of the criteria that the Secretary of State that the ballot board uses to decide if a ballot is accepted. Here are the criteria, or as Representative Quam would describe them, as stumbling stones that we have to make sure that the absentee ballots that are sent in are proper and are put forward by the voter who says that they are that voter. So here are the things that they look at. They ensure that the name and address match what was on the absentee application. They ensure the ID matches what was on the absentee application. They ensure that the voter has signed the envelope, and they ensure that a witness has completed the witness portion. And to me, the most significant of all those is the ensuring that the ID matches what was on the absentee application. So if we're in one of these, you know, Representative Quam, you brought up the dorm rooms or the apartments or anywhere else, if someone were to fraudulently fill out an absentee ballot that didn't belong to them, they would have to somehow know an ID number, be it part of the Social Security number or part of a driver's license number of the person that they are you know, that they would be trying to fraudulently fill out the ballot for. So that would be some pretty next level sleuthing that, again, is just kind of a, this is a solution in search of a problem. This is not a problem that has been affecting the, all the, you know, again, I would say in the 1,140 precincts in Minnesota that already use mail balloting, of the 153,800 registered voters who live in mail balloting precincts, and of the 26,000 voters that are currently enrolled in that permanent absentee application list. So, Representative Quam, I share your concern about making sure that we do have solid criteria in place to make sure that doesn't happen. As I mentioned, we have several stumbling stones or, you know, catching criteria to make sure that doesn't happen. And I'm confident that by passing this law, we will continue to be successful in our absentee balloting that we have here in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam, I see you have a follow-up comment. If you could please keep it brief. We do have additional members on the list and another bill.
It shall be very brief.
Sure.
We must look at history, and these criteria in statute have been ignored and waived off in recent elections by the Secretary of State's office in a side deal with a entity that a judge signed off. In other words, needing the signature. So I have low confidence that, you know, these things might just be waived off. I didn't know a constitutional officer could collude to have the law not followed in our elections. So I have less confidence, and that's why I think we really should be careful with this.
Thank you, Representative Quam. We should not impugn the motives of any other elected officials. Representative Greenman is next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wolgamott, for bringing this bill. And thank you, Representative Davis and Representative Quam, for letting me quote Mitt Romney, which I don't do very often. But when we talk about the confidence and voters' confidence in our elections, we have to tell the truth about what happened when we think about our elections. And what Mitt Romney said is the best way you can show respect for voters who are upset is by telling them the truth. Minnesota has the safest, fairest, accurate elections. Voters believe that. Our 30,000 men and women who administer our elections are our friends, our neighbors, they're our county administrators. And so when I think about what the best thing we can do to ensure that we are restoring creating confidence, it's actually helping folks see what our local elections administrators do every day and giving them the work. Because when we spread disinformation, what it means is our election administrators, our election judges, they end up being targeted, and we've seen a rise of that. So I just want to, as we talk about restoring and giving confidence in our elections. But to that point, as we think about this bill, you know, I had a chance last year to talk to local elections administrators about this policy. And what they said was that this bill, which actually comports with what the, as Representative Wagamon said, currently in statute, it's called the permanent absentee voter status. Voters actually think that they're signing up to get a ballot. I was one of those people about 10 years ago, or 5 or 10 years ago. I signed up, and I just assumed I would get a ballot in the next election because I signed up for this, and I got an absentee ballot application. We've seen a lot of confusion around this. The other thing I'd say, if you talk to local elections administrators, is this is actually going to save them money. Because one of the things they have to do now is every year people sign up for this list. They expect to be get their ballot. But instead they get an absentee ballot application, which the counties have to send out. Then they have to process it, comes back, and they send a ballot. This will allow our elections administrators to comport with voters in, what they think is going to happen and skip one of those mailings. So when we think about how to make our elections more efficient, we think about how to make sure that our counties have what they need and the resources they need, which I know is the jurisdiction of this committee, as well as we're thinking about the Secretary of State's office. This is just a really good common sense bill that will allow our elections administrators to do something that voters expect and that many voters in Minnesota already do if they're in small townships or cities outside the metro. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Thanks for bringing this. I just have a quick question or a couple. On the mail-in ballots, I know we moved to that, you know, during COVID, and I have a couple of areas in my district that are mail-in balloting. And what kind of studies have you done or research or feedback have you gotten from the mail-in ballots districts? Not just saying that they like it, but actual research, because I have often heard that they don't like the mail-in ballots, that they do prefer to vote in person. So have we done some kind of research on that?
Representative Wolgamott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Altendorf. I have, again, I can share the numbers with you. I haven't done a deep analytical research on the, you know, whether they like it or not. I know the voters that I've talked to like it because they find it convenient. Instead of having to drive all the way in, they're, you know, able to vote from their kitchen table and take a look at the candidates and take a look at the issues. And again, in the precincts that have had it, to Representative Quam's concerns, we've not been seeing any issues that would compromise the integrity of those elections.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for the record, there is no actual research done if this is preferred. It's just insinuated that. My next question is, what is the state, and I'm not sure if one of you two can answer this, but what are we doing to update our voter registry list? And I mean, you know, like as Representative Quam brought up, like can you explain more just for our confidence level? How are we updating those voter registries to update addresses so that if someone moves and then also if, you know, someone passes away?
Representative Wolgamott.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to address Representative Altendorf's previous comment, and then I'll defer to Ms. Freeman from the Office of Secretary of State. But I just want to be clear that this is very much an opt-in. So if you do not want to receive a permanent absentee ballot, you do not have to permanently receive an absentee ballot. So we're not forcing anyone to do anything. We're not saying, hey, you have to do this. This is very much for the scope of this bill, this is opt-in. This is, if you want to do this, you now have the opportunity to do this. So I just wanted to clarify that we're not making anyone do this. This is very much opt-in. If this is how you choose to vote, this is how. This is an option for you if that's what you choose. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would refer the question to Ms. Freeman from the Office of Secretary of State.
Okay, thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Nicole Freeman.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. So the state voter registration system gets data from a number of other databases, references a number of databases to update voter registration for, like you mentioned, moving as well as if someone passes away. We also, the various places we get that data are from the USPS change of address list. So if you, you know, say I want my mail forwarded to my new address, we do get that data that county administrators then can compare with your current registration to make those updates if it's applicable. We also do compare data against the driver's license, drivers and vehicle services data. And as people are updating their driver's licenses, if they're current registered voters, we compare folks who have updated their driver's licenses to see if they have also updated their name or their address. We use court records to both update for felon status, guardianship, other matters like that, in addition to name changes. We use the Department of Health as well as the Social Security Administration for death records. And then we are... Yes, we get data from other sources as well, and exchange data with states to update as people are, you know, say you move to Florida and you update your registration there. Florida shares that list with Minnesota, and we share a list with other states as well.
Thank you.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. I appreciate the explanation. And really, when I'm here, you know, and I think I speak for everyone in this room, we want this to be right. You know, we want to get our elections back, that everyone has confidence in our elections. We really do. And we want this to be bipartisan support. We want common sense. The one issue, you know, that I do have with this bill is, and as one of the testifiers mentioned, you know,
I feel like if you are a voter, you should be engaged. You should want to vote. You should be informed to vote. And when we vote in person, there is a certain amount of effort that we have to take to go to vote. So for people to get on a list where this is automatically being triggered and sent to them year after year, the issue I have is for confidence in the elections to be bipartisan, to make sure that we are really feeling like as a whole, because you guys, this is one Minnesota, right? That's what we like to say. Then we should feel confident that the person who's getting that absentee ballot has taken one step to trigger receiving that ballot. And that's all I'm asking. If I go vote in person, I am making an effort to go do that. And I would like the people that are voting absentee for the security of our elections to be triggering that step. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. I have three members on the list. If they could keep it fairly brief, I would appreciate it. And then I will turn to Representative Wolgamott for final remarks. So next on the list is Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. I do appreciate the point you made to clarify that there are checks and balances in place if someone should get a ballot to be able to make sure that the person that is filling out that ballot is in fact that individual. Having those ID numbers and having access to secure information like your social security number, for example, or part of your driver's license number. So I appreciate that. And then I just wanted to talk a little bit about what we see. And I don't know if most folks know, but absentee balloting actually started all the way back in, like, the Civil War. And it started because the president at the time, President Lincoln, felt very firmly that every citizen should participate in our elections. And that included our members of our military. Well, they couldn't be home in their home districts. He felt that it was so vital to have their input in the election as they were on the front lines, that he made absentee balloting possible. And what we see is today that we have folks in the military, folks who live overseas, who are active, engaged in our politics, who want to participate. These are the folks who would end up on, say, a permanent absentee list. Who else votes in that list? These folks are folks who live in veterans' homes. These are elderly. These are folks who are disabled, election judges, busy moms. And I am really actually a little bit insulted at the idea of saying that these voters are not informed, that they have not done their homework. In fact, the number one reason that I hear from people on why they want to do absentee balloting is because they have the opportunity to do their homework. They can look at the ballot. They can see all the candidates for every single race up and down the ballot. They can do their homework. They can dig into all the facts behind each and every candidate. And I will tell you that my 90-year-old uncle, an old school, dyed-in-the-wool Republican who believed in fairness and equity, used to vote absentee. And he voted that even when he was in his 90s, while he couldn't always get to the polls because of his issues with mobility, he was always active and engaged. And I would challenge anyone to suggest that he was not an informed voter, not even for a minute. So I just want to be clear that not only do we have the proper checks and balances to check against various records to ensure that our voter rolls are accurate and complete and that information disseminates to the counties, we also have checks and balances to ensure that every ballot that is delivered has some ability to make sure that the person submitting that ballot is in fact the eligible voter who requested that ballot. And finally, we know that individuals who are using these ballots are upstanding, solid citizens. They are citizens that you and I know. They are citizens that are related to me and to you, and they are absolutely doing their homework. That is what I hear time and time again when I talk to voters in my district, when I talk to the elderly, when I talk to folks who are disabled, who are very much engaged. And they are also primarily engaged because some of the issues that we talk about, they feel that they are not always included. So they make sure that they know exactly who is on their ballot and to get that ballot in. Thank you for your time, and thank you for the bill, Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. To the representative from the Secretary of State's office, you made comment that you tie into other driver vehicle system or license systems, voter registration databases of other states. How often is that updated and audited? And I'm just going to give you an anecdotal situation. I personally know of an individual who I personally moved to another state, personally walked them to the driver vehicle services there, renewed their license there, and registered to vote them there, or registered them to vote there. A month later, I went online to that other state and verified that individual was registered to vote. That election, which was that we moved her in October of 2021, almost a full year later, she gets an absentee ballot at her old address from the state of Minnesota. That gives it a year to update. She was registered in that state for a year, and Minnesota still sent her an absentee ballot. How does that work?
Nicole Freeman, would you like to take that?
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. So an I guess I'll start with the last comment. An absentee ballot is mailed to someone who requests it. So another entity sent an application. It was a ballot.
It was a mail-in ballot.
Okay, because they you live in, okay. So it wasn't an absentee ballot, it was a mail ballot. Okay. I would say that we get data from some states. It's a voluntary system for states to send us. Some states send us paper information. I used to work at Washington County, and you would get copies where folks at the Secretary of State's office had highlighted which counties the voters, you know, applied to from Florida or Texas or other states. So it's possible that the state that your family member moved to didn't have that sort of data exchange agreement, or it wasn't their common practice. That's, I think, the biggest thing that I could think of in that situation. And so, yes, I guess that's what I would say about that. Is it's not universal. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will try to be brief, but I do have some issues I'd like to clear up. First, I'd like to get a better understanding of the situation with election judges and why their absentee ballot situation is different, if I'm following the conversation correctly. I don't know if the author or Ms. Freeman would like to respond to that.
Nicole Freeman.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson. So there isn't anything different for election judges. I'm not sure if I think oftentimes election judges will vote absentee because they may be stationed not in their own home precinct. So then they wouldn't be able to vote on election day. So they need to either vote ahead of time in person or apply for an absentee ballot. I think maybe folks were highlighting that election judges are a group of people who often are absent from their precinct on election day doing that work. And so they might be good candidates for this permanent list. That might have been, you know, I thought I heard some of those comments and might have been the direction people were leaning towards that.
Thank you, Nicole Freeman. Yeah, my understanding was it was just an example of somebody who might be a frequent absentee voter for the reason you mentioned. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both for clearing that up, because I got the impression from the testifier that somehow election judges are treated differently, and I'm glad to hear that they're not, because I don't think they should be. The next question, so once you're on this absentee permanent list, how do you opt out?
Nicole Freeman?
Sure. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Lead Torkelson. So there you could call your county and say that you no longer wanted to be on the list. On page, I believe it's page 2 of the bill. Yeah, page 3 of the bill, that subpoint B sort of lists all of the reasons why someone must automatically be removed. And so it'd be the voter's written request, the voter passes away, absentee ballots are mailed as non-forwardable mail. So if it's undeliverable, they would be automatically removed if the county got that absentee ballot back, as well as a change in a voter status to challenge or inactive. That would remove them from the list as well.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as long as the ballot is delivered to the address indicated and it doesn't get returned, they will continue to get a ballot as long as those conditions are in place. Is that correct?
Yes.
Nicole Freeman, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Well, I know we're getting short on time, Mr. Chair, but many of us feel that this bill does not actually make our elections more secure, that it actually opens the door for possible other changes, or not changes, I shouldn't say, but ballots getting into the wrong mail, not the wrong mailbox, but getting into a mailbox where it maybe isn't really needed. And, you know, the additional step of mailing back your application for each election doesn't seem to be extraordinary. And for those that choose to use the absentee system, doesn't seem to be too high a hurdle or too large a stumbling stone, as the author has indicated. No one here is opposed to absentee balloting. It's a very useful system that advantages people that are in unusual circumstances or for just because they want to vote at home. That's really not the argument. The argument is, does this actually increase our confidence that our system is as tight as possible and that voters feel that Minnesota, continue to feel that Minnesota's system is secure and the right voters are casting the right ballots in the right place. This is not going to have bipartisan support today, I don't believe, I know it won't because I'm not voting for it, Mr. Chair. We have other questions that we would like to explore this further, but apparently it's going out of committee today, so... you know, there's some good things happening in this committee, but there's some things happening that we feel are being pushed too quickly. You're in lockstep with the rest of the legislature, apparently, because where speed is something that is being valued higher, much more highly than integrity. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Wolgamott, I think you have a very strong bill. Would you like to make your closing remarks?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the thoughtful conversation on this legislation today. Out of respect for your time, I will not go through my full remarks, and I will just once again urge your support that we strengthen Minnesotans' confidence in our elections by increasing participation, by making sure that the Minnesotans who want to exercise their freedom to vote by voting absentee and getting mailed an absentee ballot on a permanent basis are able to do that by voting for your motion to send this bill on to Ways and Means. Thank you for your consideration, and I urge your support.
Mr. Chair, I request a roll call.
Okay, a roll call has been requested. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 477, as amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Vice Chair Greenman.
Yes.
Minority Lead Torkelson.
No.
Representative Abaje.
Yes.
Representative Altendorf.
No.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Bliss.
No.
Representative Coulter.
Aye.
Representative Davis.
No.
Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Representative Purcell.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yeah.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. There being 8 ayes and 5 nays, the bill is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. So thank you, Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
The final bill on the agenda is House File 95. This is Representative Frederick's bill. Representative Frederick, would you like to move that House File 95 be recommended to be placed on the general register?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Frederick has moved House File 95 to the general register. Please describe your bill, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. This is a pretty straightforward bill. It simply looks to take what is already in practice by the Secretary of State's office and put it into law. There's currently 2 different provisions in state law, one that covers county canvassing board, another one that covers the state canvassing boards. The language pertaining to a county canvassing board says after the county canvassing board concludes its work, it must then declare who the highest vote getter is. That same language is not in statute for a state level canvassing board. And we are just looking to enshrine in law what is already being done. And that is the nuts and bolts of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. I have Nicole Freeman. Did you want to testify to this, or were you just available for questions? Okay. I think why don't you come? Be glad to have some brief comments. I think we do still have 20 minutes here. Welcome to the committee again. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg, Representative Frederick, and members. My name is Nicole Freeman. I serve as the Government Relations Director at the Office of Secretary of State. The office appreciates Representative Frederick bringing this bill forward. As he stated, it's a simple bill. It clarifies the current practice of state canvassing board members to declare the highest vote getters in the state as duly elected. The change was brought forward by, as our office was putting together our 2021 technical bill, so the language may be familiar for those members that served on the committee last year. The statute is explicit that county canvassing boards have this duty to declare the highest vote getter duly elected. The section in statute, it doesn't prescribe that same duty to the state canvassing board. So we urge a yes vote and happy to answer any member questions.
Thank you, Nicole Freeman. Are there any members of the public who would like to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, is there any member discussion? Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this seems, you know, like pretty not problematic in any way, but I'm just curious, can you describe the circumstances under which this language would actually prevent? What are we trying to prevent here? Do we think the state canvassing board is going to be taken over by somebody?
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say that anyone who's been paying attention to different races at a national level, you have seen different groups look for any way that they can to discredit an election if they are unhappy with the outcome of it. While Minnesota has a fantastic election system, and we have not had a problem with this, it is simply looking to enshrine in law our current practices to be very transparent about our election systems. And so some of those challenges that we've seen in other states cannot get brought here.
Representative Torkelson?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Could you describe the makeup of the state canvassing board and how they operate?
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The state canvassing board is made up of the Secretary of State's office, two justices from the state Supreme Court, and then two local justices as well.
Representative Ferguson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the author. We're going to support this bill today, but I don't see it as carrying a lot of weight, frankly. I have confidence in the makeup of our state canvassing board, and it seems we're going to vote for this. It's not a bad idea, but it's like a solution looking for a problem.
Sounds like fairly faint praise, Representative Torkelson. Representative Greenman?
I appreciate this bill, and I think what we've seen in other states in Michigan, in New Mexico, in Arizona, and Pennsylvania make this really important. So I'm grateful to hear Lead Torkelson say that we'll have support. I'd like to request a roll call.
Representative Greenman has requested a roll call. Is there any additional member discussion? We have closed testimony, but we do have some time, so I will allow it if you would like to come forward. So just once again, please identify yourself. When you come forward, please identify yourself again for the record, and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Elena Niehoff. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. Rochester, Minnesota has the Election Integrity Committee because some people have noticed that there are some, I would say, discrepancies or some kind of irregularities. Our committee had gone to the local authorities several times, and we have not heard the, I would say, any logical explanation of the concerns we brought. Saying that, I would honestly appreciate that I feel as the attitude of the certain representatives as do what we say. We, the people, have rights to question. Election is the right. It's right of American people. So right to question is the right. And I would appreciate if this attitude will be in this committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any additional member discussion? Okay. Any final remarks, Representative Frederick?
I appreciate the support from the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. So Representative Frederick renews the motion that House File 95 be recommended to be placed on the general register. A roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Vice Chair Greenman.
Aye.
Minority Lead Torkelson.
Aye.
Rep. Agbaje.
Aye.
Representative Altendorf.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Bliss.
Aye.
Representative Coulter.
Aye.
Representative Davis.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Representative Purcell.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Stevenson.
Aye.
There being 13 ayes and 0 nays, the bill will be placed on the general register. We have no further business. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, you rushed through the questions quite a bit on the one bill, and I understand in concern for time. It was pretty clear that the other two bills that were on the docket today were fairly non-controversial. We did have some junior members that had more questions, and they were cut off prematurely. And I understand that as your right. I just hope going forward that you realize that, you know, we have election certificates as well, and our voters, if not the number one issue, it was very close, was voter integrity. And like Lead Torkelson said, we understand and support absentee voting. We certainly want to make sure that people can vote if they want to vote. We had questions, and our members were cut off of these questions, and we're ending committee 15 minutes early. And that was after soliciting testimony from the Secretary of State because we had extra time. So I just appreciate in the future that you respect the election certificates, especially of our junior members, and let them get their questions in. Thank you.
Thank you for the comment, Representative Bliss. Evaluating the length of discussion and the level of controversy that a bill might involve is more of an art than a science. I understand there were this bill, I think, got heard in the Senate, and there were quite a few discussions. I appreciate the willingness of your members to support that bill. I did not know you were going to do so going forward, but I felt, out of respect for people who might want to testify on this, it was important to allocate sufficient time to this bill as well. I did give every member of the minority party an opportunity to testify. I did have one member of my own party request to speak after I'd said there will be three more questions, and just to stick with what I had said, I declined to let the member of my own party to speak. So I'll keep doing the best I can. I'm trying to, I'll keep trying to guess how long might be needed for bills, but I appreciate your agreeability to that last bill, but going into it, I wasn't aware that was going to be the case. So I'll keep giving you plenty ample opportunities to talk to the extent I can. Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And along those lines, this attitude that speed is more important than thoroughness is alarming, frankly. We know there's a trifecta, but it's changed the behavior of the majority party dramatically. There is a number of statistics I could list out as far as number of bills that have been passed out of committee and are on the general register, et cetera. All of us, whether we're members of the public or members of the minority, deserve a chance to examine these bills, thoroughly consider them, ask all the questions that we feel we need to ask. But there seems to be this desire to just move quickly for the sake of moving quickly. I realize that's my impression, Mr. Chair, but I think there are plenty of statistics to back it up. We are in the first month of this session. I applaud some bills that have moved quickly that need to move quickly. For instance, the conformity bill. That was really good that got off the off the docket and passed and signed quickly because it had a real impact in the immediate future. But many of these bills have no impact for some time to come. There's really no need to be in such a rush. I do applaud that we are doing individual bills, which will lessen the weight of omnibus bills as we approach the end of session. Just remind members, many members weren't here, but there was a habit in the last biennium of holding everything till the end, which I guess was done for some kind of political advantage. And now we're kind of, we've flipped that on its head to the extreme, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your letting me go on.
My pleasure. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you.
Castigation for the chair.
What was that? No, I was gonna say thank you, Mr. Chair. As a freshman legislator, I do appreciate your leadership, and I do feel like I had ability to have my questions answered, and I do try to be very precise and to get to my question. I guess my concern, and I would like to ask the majority party, our job is to represent our districts and our voters. And when they have concerns, this attitude that we are, that it turns back around to us that we're denying an election when we're asking honest, good questions to get to the bottom, our job is to represent Minnesota, both of us, and to come to common ground. And just this attitude, and we felt it today, that by asking questions that you're going to box us and label us. So, for example, I simply said in the absentee balloting that it would trigger someone to get a ballot meant that they were an engaged voter. And that was turned into a speech about how absentee balloters should not be accused of being uninformed voters. And that's a very disingenuous thing because that was not said on my part. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I guess I would just push back a little bit on the premise that speed is our primary goal here. I mean, we heard three bills today. We've heard three bills the previous weeks, and last week. I think I tried to allocate similar amounts of time to those, and it's worked. I do probably, if anything, try to overemphasize allowing the minority party to speak here. I think I've irritated some members of my own party a couple times by not recognizing them for that reason. I think we've been passing lots of very important legislation. I think we're doing what Minnesotans are expecting us to do, which is pass laws. I do think there's a distinction between previous sessions here. I think, we're, as you observed, we are moving individual bills. I can't say how things will progress as the session goes on, but, I certainly appreciate any feedback members have for me and that both from the minority and the majority party. Looks like people are getting ready to leave, so maybe I'll just stop talking at this point. I think I'll give people back 8 or 9 minutes in their day. So
thank you, Mr.
With that, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.